Okay, here we are. I haven't been here for a while, but...
Welcome back,
yeah,
Judy.
Yeah, I was in Chicago. Freezing.
The windy city, yeah.
Yeah, well...
Well, welcome to Cambridge Inside Out. Today's... What is today's date?
November 19th, 2019. The Ides of November? No, 19th. Okay.
Right, yeah. We're kind of in the lame duck period of the...
City Council.
The 2018-19 City Council term. Starting to get that feel, you know, with lightweight agendas.
When does the new council begin? Is it right after New Year's?
According to the planning charter, it happens on the first Monday of the year at 10 a.m.
Which is what?
Would be November. January 6th.
Okay, so 2020. January 6th. All right.
So pretty sure that the city council gets inaugurated at 10 a.m.
Right.
And then the one bit of business, possibly two, that they do on opening day is the election of the mayor, should it be successful.
Right,
and it's not always successful, famously so.
Yeah.
They adopt the rules, temporary rules for the city council.
Are they just standard, or they
get them off each year? What they do is they simply re-up the rules from the previous city council. Last time around, they had an ad hoc committee to modify the rules.
Yeah,
which
I think I remember that. So what
they did some very minor modifications.
Anything? But, so you anticipate anything really?
I don't think they'll change the rules. So I think everything will be the same. But one part of the rules, technically, actually, is the enumeration of the various city council's committees.
Oh, right, because so they combine some.
Yeah,
last time
so they, yeah, so you can, and you know, every few terms there's some switching around. There used to be a lot more committees than there are now. There's actually, I think, about eight now.
Well, at least they're all televised, most of them.
Right.
That's good.
Right. If you have one committee on neighborhood and long-term planning, arts, celebration, and everything else under the sun committee, sometimes I think, well, maybe that ought to be split in two, but that's just me. But they may just go, you know, just let it ride, keep it as it is, you know, but that's how they do that. And then later in the day, toward evening, is when they do the inauguration of the school committee.
Same day.
And usually, possibly by then, there will be a mayor, and then the mayor would officiate.
Is that all done at City Hall?
No, usually that's done over... let's see. Well, you know, I don't know actually where they're going to
do it. Wait, I mean, City Hall, isn't that where they did the city council? I remember going one year.
Yeah, and then I've gone to the school committee ones
that are
usually elsewhere.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Over by the high school, but I don't know. They could do it at City Hall too.
Yeah.
Who knows? But anyway, that'll commence in January. So we're now in this kind of weird period of November, December, where there were actually a bunch of various city council subcommittee meetings that were scheduled. Bunches of them have now been canceled.
Is that because it's...
You know, I think part of it is...
Or nothing can get done, or...
No, I don't think it's that. I think it's that some of the initiatives that, may have begun during one council term, essentially, unless it's a zoning petition, they all kind of terminate with the end of the council. So there may be just some wisdom in saying, okay, let's just call it quits, and we'll just wait till the next council rolls around, and then we'll sort of start some of these fresh... They have a few zoning petitions that'll still be live petitions.
Still, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the Harvard Square zoning petition will be still up.
That's the latest one. And then CARP.
CARP
has to be decided, right?
Which may be, so CARP, for those who don't know, is the petition.
It's
actually, I believe, the second or third filing of it. This is the one for rezoning for the Cambridge Side
Galleria
mall there area. I think it kind of got nixed for a number of reasons. There were some objections the first time through. Then they got intertwined with this issue about Eversource and
Power-Freeze
Cambridge,
right.
Which it somewhat still is.
Still is, yeah.
I think also the revised version came back, which was a bit different than the prior one.
Mm-hmm. Did they limit height?
It's somewhat more limited,
some people,
I believe. And I think they're also massing the heights in different places so that things are stepping up in a more acceptable way.
Yeah.
I mean, my own personal feeling about it is they can do what they want. You know, they can upzone it, downzone it,
nothing.
Well,
no, they can't do what they want. Who's they? You
city
mean the
council.
City? Oh, okay.
City council.
I thought you meant... Yeah.
But the thing is that in my personal opinion, that stretch of First Street where the garage is, that's going to get some revisions because of the settlement that happened with
courthouse.
Because of the courthouse matter and the leasehold agreement for that. I've always felt that that stretch of First Street could use a little re-envisioning.
Well, that's Tom Joyce, who was a public commenter, just pointed that right out.
Yeah.
He said, you know, that needs to be a vibrant, you know, the plan would open that up, because right now it's a wall.
Right. I think the city, I think, I know some of the people who are in this, the planning department, you know, community development department, do think about this stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Green Line is going to get moved to the other side of the highway. First Street will continue all the way over to the McGrath Highway, which it doesn't do right now.
Yeah, it could be a much more vibrant corridor.
They can really reinvent it all and make it great.
Right, because the other side of the gallery, you know, where the lagoon is that's very nice, but everything else is like a big fortress. And so if you can open all that up.
Yeah. So.
But they do need to deal with the energy issue. Well, they do need to deal with energy issues, whether it's Eversource or not. They're going to need more energy. We all do. We love our phones.
I agree,
love our tablets. We love everything.
But the way I look at it, that is an underlying issue that runs through all of these things.
Right. So you're saying they shouldn't deny this one just
based on
that.
No, not just based on that. I think that was being used as somewhat of a political leverage matter. I think that this councilors need to step back and say, well, what looks like to us to be the best planning strategy for this area?
I mean, there's just so much you can stop or control or do yourself.
Yeah.
And we can't, you know.
And I think whatever they decide, whatever modifications to this CART petition for dealing with that area, they should be doing it in mind.
Yeah.
And honestly, this is really where Dennis Carlone can be the best friend to everybody, because he was Parson, who's writing a lot of the East Cambridge Riverfront
plan.
Well,
what has been his take so far? I don't remember.
You know, I don't really know. I don't know how anybody's going to vote. I haven't even given it any thought.
It would be a shame if they voted it down.
I think they could vote. They can modify it. They can amend it. They could come up with something.
Well, they have to do something, because doesn't it expire December 31st or something?
Well, then they could just let it expire and it could refile it again and go through it again. But the thing is at some point, people need to step up and say, well, what kind of city do you want? Do you want it just to be big, big, big? Or do you want it to be great, great, great? And, you know, sometimes those are not compatible.
Well, I think some people would say they want it to be planned. Have more oversight of it rather than whatever I'll use. You know, each piece is then...
I mean, I think that area generally could use a little more...
What did the mission say about that?
It didn't.
It didn't address that area?
No, there are certain tremendous deficiencies in
$3.5 million.
This so-called envision process where they didn't really bother to envision much of anything in some regards. And this is one such place.
I think it's an example of when the city kind of throws money at consultants.
Yeah,
and not all the time, but it just... I don't know.
Yeah,
doesn't
I mean,
seem to be getting
you know, I was thinking about this a lot lately, you know, especially in the wake of all the election-related stuff and all the dogma that was being batted back and forth.
Yeah.
You know, people that, you know, I remember there was a group called Cambridge Citizens for Livable Neighborhoods once upon a time.
Still is, right?
Well, I think the entity still technically exists and is doing business as the Association of Cambridge Neighborhoods. You know, and this Cambridge Citizens Coalition was formed, which sort of is whistling the same, a similar tune. You know, they have this group like Better Cambridge, which seems to advocate more for bigger, period. And I think that there's probably a kind of a sweet spot in there where some level of good density is good, but not so bulky, not so high as to become not livable and based on whatever that means.
Well, some people would say that happened in Central Square, but...
Yeah.
It's just, you know,
I mean, I think transit-oriented development still makes a lot of sense.
Well,
you know, but the thing
transit
is,
for who?
right, really.
People that can afford it.
Yeah, But, you know, the thing is, when new buildings, you know, I have a feeling about new buildings are always, should normally be expected to be most expensive when they're new. And then, but then once they're in place, then over years,
we'll talk about that in 3 years, see what the rents are over there.
Oh, 3 years is far too short a time.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Now, I'm talking more like in the period of, like, 15 years, 20
years
down the road.
Yeah, but I don't think that helps people right now looking for
housing. No, it doesn't. So. But the thing is that, you know, if you don't build the housing at some point, you don't have
Well, you get the inclusionary units, but that's about it.
Yeah, but I think you just need units. And you know, I think it's pretty clear that in the whole region, you're going to need more housing units, period. And I think in Cambridge, to some degree, that's true as well. You know, we'll see how it
But what kind of housing? That's a whole other issue. All right. Well,
you know, housing with walls and
roofs.
No,
I know, but you and
kitchens.
I don't totally agree on the
right.
AHO thing. So, all right, so let's go on to other, not those kind of issues.
So, all right, so actually one thing you know, this is a sort of a personal obsession with me, isn't
it?
Oh yeah. So every year since 1997, when we first implemented the computerized elections for cities, municipal elections, you know, sort of it's become a bit of a tradition that at some point, once everything is finalized, I get access to the ballot data.
So in other words, before that, it was all paper ballots, and you really, they didn't have
the only way you could actually, there legally, if you wanted to pay and
to get those,
then you could have an election commissioner's one by one turn them over, and you could record the information.
You could do that, I guess.
So that was not practical.
So 97 is when they computerized.
Yeah, the only time I actually know that anybody ever did anything like that was when there was a vacancy was going to happen in the wake of Billy Walsh's conviction and sentencing for bank fraud. So when he left the council, they had to choose a replacement, and that was the year when Jimmy McSweeney thought he was the last person counted out. Based on the 1993 ballots.
Wow.
And he thought he should be then the person who would replace Walsh. But
I don't even know these names.
My friend Dave and I looked at that and we said, we don't think that's actually what's going to happen. We think Anthony Gallucci is going to get the victory. And
so you went to the Election Commission and gathered the data?
We didn't. But the thing is that McSweeney's people did. And they actually had them turn them over, one of them, they recorded the data, and then they went back to a friend's house, and they actually did kind of, just based on the markings that they had recorded by hand, they then just figured out who the replacement would be.
But then they had to then let the officials do that, because
you
don't go to someone's house and say this is who it should be.
No, but the thing is that when they discovered that in fact it would be Gallucci who would actually win, which didn't set well, so then that led to the filing of a lawsuit.
Oh,
and it was McSweeney versus election commissioners, or McSweeney versus the world, or whatever.
What were
they
trying to base it on? I mean, if the results of the
I actually went to the court proceedings for this one. And I met with the lawyers, actually, from McSweeney.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really based on a question of, is there a fairness, is the procedure that's used for filling vacancies, is that...
So what was the procedure then? Shouldn't it be the next person's votes that were closest, or no?
Okay, so the way it's determined, and I can actually tell you who actually the replacements would be for all of our newly elected officials in a bit.
Yeah.
But the way it works in Cambridge is that should a vacancy arise... Mm-hmm. For whatever reason, during a council term or a school committee term, it's the same rule. What you do is you take the quota of ballots that were used to elect that particular elected official. And you take those ballots only, and you basically run them and do a mini count to elect one. So it's just an instant runoff procedure. You sort them by next available choice.
Well, how do you determine what the next available choice is?
You read the ballot. So, for example, if there was a ballot that said Jimmy McSweeney number one and number two was Robert Winters, then it would be distributed to Robert Winters, and they would just do it all
that way. So they literally looked at the number twos, another random kind of thing.
But the thing is, if number two was somebody who's already elected, then you bypass that and you go to the next available choice.
And that's how it's done.
That's how it's done. That's how it's always been done, and it was always done with paper ballots in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, you can now, since all the ballot data is just electronic record, you can actually just run it right through the same tabulation software.
So what was he arguing? That method isn't fair
Well, he made a case, or his lawyers made a case, why it should be the last person eliminated. I thought that was totally dead wrong.
Why?
Because if you have, for example, a very close election where the ninth seat is picked up,
By two
candidates that are ideologically very different, right? And then the last person counted out is fundamentally very different than the person who was actually elected.
Yeah.
You wouldn't necessarily view it as fair by eliminating one person and putting his diametric opposite in to replace him.
But then you're getting into replacing the values of that person, and that's sort
of questionable, isn't it? But the thing is the idea about ranked choice balloting is your ballots are essentially like acting as proxies for the voters. So the question is, what would the voters want? So if the voters were to elect Billy Walsh, who would their next choice be?
Okay, I see. So basically, so, the way they did it is more fair, because then you're looking at there, a random there, transfer kind
there,
of thing.
There are a couple of little oddball things that maybe could be made better, but the thing is, the logic is pretty basic and simple. It just says, let's let the ballots that elected Billy Walsh decide who Billy Walsh's replacement would be. So then that was Anthony Galluccio, and that's how Anthony Galluccio was.
So you're saying they pulled all his number one ballots?
It's not just the number ones, it's number ones and subsequent ballots that came to elect him in the first place.
Okay, but they could find those.
They were actually, back when they did it with paper ballots, those
I bet it was easier then.
They were just put in, it's much easier now.
Oh, okay.
So they basically just put in a box or an envelope, you know, and then here's your 2,000 ballots.
So now, all right, this is what you're going to talk about, where you can actually see what candidate got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Oh, yeah, so you can look at all the ballot data now. All right. The thing is, you also, one of the outputs of the tabulation software is what they call the final piles report, which basically mimics what we used to do with the paper count, so that you can actually see the ballots that were used to elect each individual counselor. So what you do is you simply, there's a file, you basically just do one little tiny edit, you change it, you run it through the tabulation software, and it determines the replacements.
Wow.
It takes it takes about a tenth of a second to do.
All right, so later you can
I actually did it with each of the counselors and school committee members, just to see who replaces.
It's awful to start talking about the replacements already. But no, we'll do that in the next segment. Because actually, this is interesting, what you've actually discovered here.
Yeah. So anyway, a lot of things you can extract from the ballot data, you know, and it's, you know, it's available if somebody wants it. I always go there to be first in line because, you know, this is sort of my thing, right? So
what are we looking at here?
All right. So this is right here, just the first sample is... This is actually something you get from not from the ballot data, but basically from the output of the election is the final official results.
Let's see if I can make this a little bigger.
Yeah, and I just mention it in here because the thing is that the election results on Tuesday night on November 5th were actually not official. Those were the preliminary results. Then there was when you included what we call the auxiliary ballots on Wednesday, then we call that the unofficial results. But nothing's really over
until you get the overseas
absentee ballots. Mm-hmm. And I think there were about 9 provisional ballots, you know, voters who were, you know, they were either challenged or whatever. I think maybe it was only 5 of them or several of them accepted. Some people actually said, I swear I'm registered, but then when you actually checked, in fact, they weren't. So so some of them were accepted and some of them were not. So it did change the totals and the count accordingly. It actually was almost no change at all. There were just a few extra ballots. Nothing unusual happened. The margins were very similar, and then it just sort of went on. This is a two-pager. Actually, if you go to the second page, you can just scroll it, I think. then, you know, it again comes down to the same...
Oh, this is the final. Okay.
Right. So basically the election was fully decided at the end of the transfer of Azeem's ballots, the 14th count. And at that point, there was a gap between Craig Kelly and Dennis Carlone of, I think, about, 36 plus 24, about 58 ballots.
Yeah.
So that was really the gap, and that's really what determined the difference between
So does this mean then that, for instance, Stephen and Alana came in 8th and 9th?
Yeah, they were both...
Alana was 9th?
No, Tim Toomey was
order elected.
The order elected.
Oh, so, but why is she down here on the 14th?
Because
count?
I have these ordered based on the original number one totals.
Oh, okay, because he's in the 15th.
Right.
I
so
see it up here.
So, for example, that's why you see Tim Toomey came in 3rd in number one ballots, but he was actually the 9th person elected.
Yeah, and Craig came in, his number one votes were
he came in 7th in number one votes, but then he ended up 10th in the poll at the end.
Alana
Mallon started at 10th and was the...
Ended up 14th.
8th person.
Oh, 8th person, right.
Sixth person.
So the 7th was Stephen and 8th.
Right, and that was largely because of the way these slates were operating.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, the power of the slates, I have to say, you don't give them much, but, you know, the more
I think they were very
real. Powerful.
But the only point I would make about that is that the slates really are best understood in the margins. In other words, and I'll make this point emphatically, really, is that somebody who's voting for Sumbul Siddiqui or Denise Simmons or Tim Toomey are voting for them because they're Sumbul Siddiqui, Denise Simmons, and Tim Toomey.
They don't care about the slates.
And they could have been on any slate at all. Right. The thing is, they're going to get their votes. So,
you could probably say that about Patty Nolan, too, in a way.
To some degree.
Because she sort of saw...
But she's a crossover candidate who was going from school committee to city council.
Which are usually successful.
Yeah. Usually. No, they're usually...
Oh, really?
It's an uphill battle because...
Mark was, Denise was, Henrietta was.
But it's only because there was a natural replacement.
Oh.
So when Alice Wolfe first tried to jump from city council to school committee, she was not elected.
Oh, really? I didn't know
she
that.
She was elected in a subsequent election, but not then. It's not easy. And even though she was like a top vote getter on the school committee.
Wow, that's interesting.
So, it depends on whether there's an opening in the body and whether you're a reasonable match to the opening.
Yeah.
So, Patty Nolan kind of could match up with Jan Devereaux in some respects.
So that
helped her.
Okay.
In many ways, right?
All right.
But so that's a little bit of that one. You know, we'll show you a few more of these items here as well. I think maybe just because we were talking a little bit about... actually, let me go to thing for the number...
Where?
Number one vote distribution.
Go
I
here?
Think. Yeah, this try one? That one. I think that's right. So again, this is stuff
this
that you don't see
read.
From the... Right, it won't be easy, but it's really
bigger.
Just more to make the point about it.
Yeah.
Okay, so... The thing is one thing that you can do is you can only get this from the ballot data. You can't get it from the actual election results when you see the official output. You actually have to put this into a database program.
So what are we looking at here? What
so
this
again,
precinct, so, ward and precinct?
Right. So this is the type of stuff like when on election night people were, arching over to read the glass strips.
Because that was only
Tuesday night's results.
Right.
So basically what it shows is that by ward and precinct, if you read down for each candidate, it basically tells you where
how
their
many
strength
votes.
Was.
Interesting. So what stands out
you
here
to you?
Have to
be a real political junkie to really get into this here. But, for example, if you look at the column for John Pitkin, you see he's got 122 votes in Ward 6, Precinct 1.
And that's where he lives.
But he didn't get them all around the city. So you see his support was very concentrated.
What do you think was the most... Did you studied this to see who was the most representative of all of wards?
You mean a true citywide
candidate?
Honestly,
I know last time was Denise, wasn't it?
I think she has support.
I wonder if Sumbul...
They support.
Where's
Sumbul's column? Around.
Hers is actually, look
I think
at that.
She's pretty much a strong citywide
she
candidate.
She is, look at this.
Yeah.
They're all in the double digits.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh my goodness, look at that.
And
Ward 9, 106,
right.
And
Sumbul's
Ward 2.
Sumbul's biggest precincts are in the north, out by Ridge Towers.
But
area,
Ward 5,
sure,
well, that's her new precinct
really well.
Anyway.
Yeah.
She
right,
goes
exactly,
there now.
That's true.
Yeah.
It's true.
Okay, Ward 10,
So anyway, so this is sort of, it's useful for a number of reasons, not the least of which is just to sort of audit things and sort of check and make sure everything kind of adds up right, which, that's some part of what I have to do when I'm sort of looking at the ballot data initially.
Right,
Another thing that's very interesting, if you go do that very last
right
tab here.
Right here, okay.
Right, I think this is the one here.
Mayor.
So this is just something that is absolutely not how we choose a mayor.
Right.
Okay.
But
the thing is that I remember Rusty Drugan was a former election commissioner, and Rusty and I used to say, one way they could actually do an election of a mayor, but of course nobody's going to want it. The councilors aren't going to give up their authority to make their own choices, of course.
Yeah.
But you could argue that a reasonably fair way to sort of reflect the public opinion would be basically to take all 9 winners, take their ballots, and allocate them in the same way we do the regular election. And then do a sequence of runoffs to elect one.
Hmm.
And if you do that, this is what happens. Okay, so the total number of ballots that are live ballots is always 2,813. If I'm reading that correctly.
Yeah.
Right. There's some ballots that didn't list any of the winners, so they can't be counted toward any of these ones here. But then you look and see whose comes in last, which was Sabrina Wheeler in this account. And then you defeat that candidate, so it brings it down to 8. Then you look who's last there. You defeat that candidate, which would have been Toomey. And then in sequence, you defeat Toomey, then Mallon, then Carlo and McGovern. In the end, what you end up with is actually the last 5 candidates standing are McGovern, Zondervan, Simmons, Nolan, and Siddiqui. McGovern being in 5th place. So when you defeat him, it actually brings it down to Zondervan, Simmons, Nolan, and Siddiqui. Zondervan being in fourth place. So then you knock him off, and it's down to the final three, or three women. Isn't that interesting?
Hmm.
Simmons, Nolan, and Siddiqui. You defeat Simmons, and then that basically settles it, because at that point, Sumble Siddiqui's got 9,346 to Patty Nolan's 6,968. Kind of interesting that newcomer Patty Nolan actually ends up finishing second in the mayoral sweepstakes if you were to do it this way. Mm. And then you can formally do a final count just to bring it up to the quota, mm-hmm. which is 50% plus one, hmm. essentially. So, as I say, it's a completely meaningless thing, but the thing is I do it every couple of years with ballot data just to kind of see, well, how would the voters decide? And it's actually usually
right, but then you're basically saying who really has the most votes.
Except that there are quite a few instances where, in fact, it's not the person with the most votes.
Well, at least it seemed that way, or I don't know.
Well, I mean, I could show you lots of elections where, in fact, it doesn't work out to be the person with the most votes, most number one votes, because it's a matter of how the various groupings, especially in this world of slates, the slates would actually be a very, very dominant factor in determining the outcomes there. I mean, if you had a lot of number one votes but you weren't on anybody's slates, you wouldn't get any transfers.
Wow,
there. So ultimately, you'd
be left out. Sorry, Craig. Yeah.
Well, that happened into the vote to elect nine.
Yeah.
So that's how we do the instant runoff to choose a mayor if you mm-hmm. wanted to do it that way. But let's be clear, it's on November 6th, they're just going to take the votes. And, and they're already, I'm sure, negotiating amongst each other.
Yeah.
Who wants to be mayor?
I remember Henrietta Davis was always the most popular vote, but she never got to be mayor until she finally did, right?
And her very last term, was mayor. She went out on top, absolutely.
You need consensus.
So anyway, so in the next half hour, we'll show a couple more of these things. Then we'll talk about some other things around town as well. You know, it's, again, if you leave it to me, I'll just obsess on ballot.
Yeah, right. We'll try to shut them up.
All right, so see you in a few minutes.
Bye.